It's time for the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Now here's Jake.
Jake, Rural Matters, welcome back, everybody. Another Friday here in the Valley, 1430 AM KYKN. And as always, so grateful to be here, especially unbelievable. We're weeks away from the end of the year, middle of the Advent Christmas season. And with that in mind, I want to have some fun going with that for these next couple of programs. Before I bring in one of my favorite people on the whole planet to help me facilitate that, we've had some big news this past week. For those of you that follow the president and his news conferences, there was a huge agriculture roundtable this past week where the president had brought on his secretary of ag, and that's Brooke Rollins. And she facilitated a lot of this meeting with ag-related people, whether they are crop farmers and so forth, also industries like John Deere. And the president's goal was to get the message out. He wants farmers to get rich. And for me to see this coming from years of being in the dairy business and knowing many farmers, I guess I could say I was shocked. I've never seen a president go so far out to bring the agricultural issues to the forefront. And this just didn't start there. And I want to emphasize this because this is important. Back when President Trump's first term in the 2016 time, he went to Minnesota and Wisconsin and lobbied hard for the dairy farmer, basically facing Canada and telling them that their milk protein concentrates were violating trade laws and making it very difficult for the American farmer, and particularly the American dairy farmer. And he did that several times, and that really spoke volumes to me. His ag secretary at that time was Sonny Perdue, who was out of Georgia, a very, very accomplished person in and of himself there. But for the president to care about less than a fraction of his voting potential populace, to say, hey, you guys are sticking it to the dairy farmer, that's wrong, I got to look into this. And that really resonated with me. Like him or not, this man is trying to peel every onion and look at everything. And what really impressed me about the roundtable this past week was that the federal government is going to be giving $12 billion of assistance to farmers across America. That'll be figured out through the Farm Service Agency. And there's a billion left to help facilitate this, as far as I know. So figure $13 billion to get this all done, 12 of it going to the farmers, and most likely it'll happen in a reasonable amount of time. But what really also impressed me was a couple of other things. Number one, President Trump made a point of saying that farmers don't want subsidies. They want a level, fair playing field. When America does trade policies like NAFTA back in the 90s under, I believe, Bill Clinton, what generally happens is the big, big, big industries get something tangible. Everybody's got a give and take on this, but agriculture and then particularly the dairy farmer gets sent down the river again. And then what happens is the dairy farmer will get some sort of Band-Aid subsidy that might help them limp along. But it really doesn't give the farmer, the dairy farmer, and other farmers a level playing field. We don't want subsidies. We want to make our product. We want to get paid for it. We don't want to break the bank over it. But what we want is a level playing field. And the other countries heavily subsidize their farmers so that the country can maybe take a hit or the industry can take a hit. But ultimately, they'll be okay, but it'll be tough out here. And the other part of this this roundtable that also said a lot to me was when it was over, he dismissed the press and everything. He said, hey, I want all you farmers into the Oval Office. I want to talk to every one of you. And let me tell you guys, there are a lot of people sitting around that big round table of his. And so for that, President Trump, I give you kudos. Madam Secretary Rollins, I hope that you and the president and those that were with you that day and further going into the end of this year and looking ahead, that this can work out and be something really special. And there will be pluses and minuses in this. Not everybody's going to be happy. There's a lot of things that have to get worked out in the ag world, particularly labor. And we're all looking at how that'll play out as well. But President Trump, I give you credit for doing that. And to my farmer friends listening, I'm looking forward to unpacking this with some of you in my program going into next year. So with that said, Merry Christmas on that end. And I hope that there's some money in every farmer's stocking going into next year. And you know what? Farmers should. They should think about getting rich, because it costs a heck of a lot of money to do what you do. And you have to live with a lot of X factors that you absolutely cannot control. God bless. Merry Christmas to the farmers. Thank you, President Trump. With that, I want to introduce my brother, Arthur, my brother, closer than a brother, calling you, Artie, from Salem, Oregon to Atlanta, Georgia, particularly where you're at in the outskirts thereof. Hey, man, how's it going out there?
It's absolutely beautiful outside, Jake, and you're going to hate this, but it's sunny and you could step outside in, you know, jeans and a t-shirt and be fine.
Well,
it's sensible, or sensible sweater weather at worst.
Art, it is. It's an amazing place where you are, and for those of you folks that don't know, my brother Arthur grew up obviously on the dairy with my siblings and I, mom and dad as well, of course. But Arthur, we're each one of six siblings, and you're part of the four brothers, myself included, and then we've got two sisters that came later on. And you grew up on the farm, and I think, you know, you grew up on the dairy, Arthur. You and I both were born in Southern California. Our sisters weren't. But
I don't remember much of it. I don't remember much of that part.
No, and that's okay. You know, Gerald and I and a little bit of Louie did. But you grew up on the dairy as well as us. But you came in as a younger brother, and things were doing all right, you know? And Art, I got to ask you, you know, Gerald and I and Louie probably did more of the work at that time, and you were younger and stuff. Mm-hmm. But your world became musical and magical. Talk about what the farm did for you by God's grace growing up, what you saw, and how it shaped you into going the route that you took.
Oh man, I think wow, that's a lot, Jake. That's
cool. you got 3.5 minutes,
you know?
For this part.
I think, you know, for me on the farm that we had, and just the size of it and the way it was, you know, run. It was like, you know, you guys seem to have everything under control pretty good. I think by the time I came along, I mean, I got to feed the calves, you know, which was a huge, important, you know, job. Keep those guys, you know, fed well and cleaned. But, you know, I think you guys did a lot of the heavy lifting type of stuff. I didn't even start milking. I helped out in the milking parlor, you know, prepping the cows and stuff. You know, for either you or Gerald or even Louie for that matter at times. But I never solo milked until I came back when Bev and I and our first daughter, Opal, moved back from Colorado back to Oregon. Oh my gosh, was that 94, 95? And, you know, when I started working with you then, that was the first time I milked solo. You know, so that's already different than what you and Gerald and Louie, you know, went through.
You did. You
learned, experienced.
Yeah, you know, you came on at a later stage in your life, and because you and Bev were living in Eagle, Colorado, which wasn't far from Vail, literally.
No, not a, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I worked in Beaver Creek as a house entertainer, playing piano and doing close-up magic tricks at the Inn at Beaver Creek. Which I believe at that time was owned, I don't know, it was Sony.
Sony owned it.
Morocco. Yeah, it was a neat time. But yeah, and coming back, it's really, but you know, I did do other chores, you know, definitely when the hay bucking season was coming around. But summer times for me, you know, when I was really at the working age of high school and stuff, I worked, you know, 4B Farms, moving irrigation pipes. You know, I did that through high school most of the time. And also, you know, I worked for Fred Kaser over and doing grass seed, doing swathing, driving swathers, and then combines, and then bagging seed. So I think you know, my farm work was more crop farming than dairy farming when I was a kid, in that sense, you know. I mean, except for, you know, before high school, doing the chores and all the fun.
Well, you know,
You
had things were going decent back in the, you know, start talking about the 70s and even going into the 80s,
yeah.
Art. And there was a lot more dairies back then. And you didn't really have to. And you were you all of us had an opportunity to work for other people at some level, but you know, I always seem to come back to working with mom and dad and all of that. And you know, we're rounding out this particular segment, but what I want to talk about going forward is, you know, how did growing up shape you, and then what got you to get so excited and so prolific with playing the piano, and then where this all dovetailed into doing your magical act as well. This is Jake, Jake Atzma, Rural Matters. I'm talking to my brother Art Atzma in Atlanta. We're going to unpack quite a bit of stuff going forward. Hang on.
Back to the Blue Star Gas, Rural Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Welcome back, everybody. Hope you're having a glorious Friday. And I hope your Advent season is centered on the beauty of the season. That is my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. But you know, you can have some fun too, and that's what it's all about. And in this time, it's always good to celebrate. And helping me to celebrate on the show is my brother, my youngest brother, Art, you know, Arthur Atzma in Atlanta. Oh, Art, you know what? You and I were talking a little bit in the break about what you did, and I want to just throw this at you. What I think farming really does for growing up. I've had FFA young people on this program. As a matter of fact, I've covered it quite a bit with county fairs and dairy princesses, these young people, and they are so animated. They're so focused. They're so determined, and they are so happy and full of energy. And Art, what do you think that did for you growing up? You didn't necessarily want to be a dairy farmer. I know your brothers did, but yet you picked up a lot of stuff working on farms, dude. What did it do for you? Making some money, learning the work ethic. Talk about your early experiences and how it helped shape you.
Yeah, you know,
you
have to be there, you know, with the farm, no matter what farm it is, however you're doing it, especially on the dairy farm, man, you have to show up. You have to be there. The cows have to, you know, they have to be fed, they have to be milked, they have to be looked after, kept after. It has to be done on a schedule, and you have to plan ahead. You know, you plan ahead for hay season. You know, I remember us, you know, preparing the barn. Oh yeah, we got to clean it out, get it ready for. We got, you know, loads of hay. We're going to be bucking hay, you know, coming June here, coming up. And I remember just be prepared for stuff, so you don't have to then work harder when things are coming in. Same with silage season. You know, there's always these be prepared and then do it. Do the work, no matter how you feel, what the weather's like, how tired you could be, you know, you've got to show up and you got to be there. And that really, really translates in the entertainment field. When, you know, there's times you've got to drive, you know, spend car time. Like, I'll drive to a gig. We just got back from Indiana, and you know, that's a 9-10 hour drive, and you show up, you drive, do your show, you know, and then you get a hotel, spend the night. But it's that stamina. I don't know. There's that real drive. You want to do your best. You have to do your best. You know, you can't cut corners when working on the farm, because everything will suffer if you do. I'm sure that's with every industry, but definitely in the farm industry. And I definitely carried that over into my field, you know, doing magic tricks and playing piano and making people laugh, you know.
You know, Art, you hit on something really good, and it's this continuance of 7 days and, you know, roughly maybe 12 to 14 hours. The place never really closes. It just takes pauses between the next time slot, and that's great. But you know, one of my early memories, Art, where I was at the time sleeping in the farmhouse, was that Dad faithfully got up virtually every morning, unless we had some hired help, three in the morning, down the steps, down the second floor, down to the steps, and then going out, rain or shine, cold or what have you, and he was out there milking the cows and then we'd come out later to help doing some of the charge. It was a much smaller time there. But the when you look at the strength of character and the determination and the God-given ability to get up every night, and then also you got to repeat, lather, rinse, repeat that afternoon, so to speak, and continue on doing that. But there's something about building yourself, and there's a strength there that I saw from Dad.
Right.
And then Mom, of course, partnering with him to make all this happen. Our, you know, Mom and Dad always encouraged us to pursue, you know, our dreams, if you will, tangible ones.
Yeah.
And when did the music bug hit you? How did that happen for you, dude?
I remember the first time hearing the piano was at, you know, the Sunny Slope Christian Reformed Church, and just being a little kid, little, and we worshiped at that time in the Fellowship Hall.
Great acoustics.
Which is not a Fellowship Hall.
Great acoustics there.
Before they built the new building. So I remember, I don't know who was playing it. But playing the piano and just being fascinated by it. And then, you know, Mom, Paca Yop, our Paca Yop, he was a church organist.
Which means our grandpa. Which was our grandpa.
And so, yeah, our grandfather, sorry.
We're going to talk culture here later on. Keep going.
I know, it's different. And I remember, you know, we got a piano and we could start taking piano lessons. And I had to wait till I was 7 because they said, you know, you should be able to read better. You should be able to read pretty good. And when you're 7, you've got some reading skills down. And that's a good time to start, you know, piano lessons. So I remember waiting till I turned 7 and then was able to start taking piano lessons. I was really excited about it. And first lesson, it just made sense. It's like, I can do this. I had a sense of, I can actually do this. So I played piano, and Louis also, my brother Louis, played piano as well, and my older brother. He started doing other things. His interest waned and went different directions. But I loved it. I just thought it was a fascinating instrument. I love the sound, still do. So that was the start. I remember playing in recitals, you know, the Christmas concerts. We always had to, you know, each class would present something, but then also anybody who played an instrument or piano, you could, you know, do a song as well. And I remember playing solos, you know, from being a young kid already, and just those kind of small school setting concerts. It shapes you. You know, you have to learn to face the pressure of performing something pretty intricate, you know, in front of a lot of people.
All right. So you did Christmas. What do you remember? You remember any of the Christmas songs you played at Monitor Grade School? You remember any of them?
I remember doing, Irving Berlin's White Christmas. I remember playing that one when I was in like the fourth grade.
Right.
And then I also remember, doing an arrangement of O Holy Night.
That
still to this day is one of my favorite songs to play. It's just a beautiful song. And and then of course, you know, Jingle Bells and some other things. There's all of the songs. But those two I distinctively remember spending a lot of time on and learning how to play.
It was encouraged because
feeling good about it.
I had the opportunity to take lessons as well. And I think I had one and I knew it just wasn't for me. And so, you know, we got a couple of minutes and I'll break it down for you a little bit before we end the segment, Art. We grew up in the home that we grew in where the Word of God was the cornerstone of our life. Mom and Dad, we lived it. We saw it through them and everything. And then I would say then for you, pretty close, right below that, depending on where you were at with your faith back then, bro, that piano in that room. And then for me, it was the Red Barn where I could play basketball. And you know, all of the things that we experienced on the farm, but my gym was up a ladder and up that barn, and I could rubber boots, gloves on, dirty or clean.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Where you went to, practice piano, man. I went to get stuff done, and then all I wanted to do was shoot hoops. And honestly, that...
Well, yeah, but we played. I went up there many times.
Oh, yeah.
I remember Louie and I and you playing commando basketball.
Smash mouth.
Like tackle basketball.
Yeah, the only rules were there weren't any.
The only rules were for Louie and I to stop you from scoring.
And I want to thank you for that.
We were unsuccessful at.
There was a time. You know, it was such a beautiful experience. It was a tough experience growing on the farm. There was a lot of things that we had to accept and deal with. But and we'll talk about that here shortly.
Yeah, after. I think we should because I think, yeah.
Am I conjuring up any memories for you?
Red Barn was such a cool place.
Yeah, and it's a pity we did have to tear that thing down because you got to move on and upgrade and all of that stuff. But, you know, Art, we had some great things, you know, and I remember so well being just a few years older than you, watching you take that piano and taking it to the levels you are now. And we're going to talk about all of that because we got a lot of time because this is my program, dude. And it's Christmas time, and by golly, I'm going to get something that I want for Christmas, and that's a great visit with you. Visiting with Art, my bro, Rural Matters. Hope the news is good because we're coming back after that. See you soon.
The conversation continues on the Blue Star Gas, Rural Matters, off 1430 KYKN.
Jake, Rural Matters, back half, fastest part of my week is doing this program, because if you knew what I do for the rest of the week, you could figure that out why, but that'll be for some other time. Art, my brother Art.
Yeah, Jake.
Youngest brother, one of six, as I am, two sisters beneath you and I.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the second oldest and older brother, Gerald. Art, talk about, I've always wondered, do you ever get, like nervous?
Oh my gosh.
When you were young, okay, we talk about those Christmas concerts at Monitor Grade School. Mm. There was a gym full of parents. They made their way out there. There was a lot of people there, and you're playing a solo on the piano or accompanying your class. Yeah. What about it? How does that feel for
it's
you?
It's hard. No, it's I love it. I love what I do. I love prepping for the shows. I love doing the shows. The moments before the shows are awful, and it's I've tried many Jedi mind trick tried to snap yourself out of it, but there's breathing exercises I can do and stuff to help, but there's always it's not a panic, but there's a real.
Is it game day?
Super hyper alertness maybe, or attention to fears or something before you go on. There's heart rate goes up, man. It's always that way. I one of these days, as soon as I'm on stage, it's fine. Once I hit it, once the first line joke, whatever comes out, everything's fine. But man, the moments leading up to it, it's never seems to feel like, oh, come on. It never feels like I shouldn't feel this way. It's always nervous. But then it's fine once it gets going.
I've had opportunity, Arthur, to be with you kind of backstage-ish, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of my best memories of you were when the Oktoberfest in Mount Angel hired you and your friend Reese.
Yeah.
And you guys were for a couple years in a row, you guys did shows, and you particularly, being there in Mount Angel, talk a little bit about that. What did that mean to you? Be able to do a few.
That was the hugest thing, man. I remember the Oktoberfest as a kid and just loving it. Just the favoriteest thing to go see. There was the family circus that would be performing with Gizmo the Clown, the ringmaster. They had a gal, she would stand on a huge ball and jump rope on it, that's impossible, and then there's the Royal Lichtenstein Circus, which was head up by a guy who I believe was a Jesuit priest who started it, and just fantastic. He would do magic in his show. They had animals. I couldn't watch enough of it.
So you were marrying internally. You've got your music inside your soul, and then now you're gaining almost a parallel appreciation for all things deceptive, right? In a way.
Right. That's funny. Yeah. I mean, it's more than just trying to trick people, because that's not the thing. Is to share with them something that's truly wonderful. You know, there's, I'm pretty upfront about, you know, what I'm doing is, you know, sleight of hand. You could consider it. It's like juggling where the moves are invisible, you know. A juggler will come out and, like Reese, who's just amazing, Reese Thomas, Juggle Mania. Oh my goodness, he's a phenomenal circus artist, performer, juggler, and just hilarious comedian. The guy speaks a mile a minute, and I'll watch him. You know, he'll practice, you know, hundreds of hours to do this trick that everybody's going to see. And it's like, well, I practice hundreds of hours, and hopefully you won't see the trick. You know, it'll just look like magic. You know, juggling with invisible moves. And it's fun. It's a challenge to do it, but it's also, you know, the results are entertaining and fun. If you can create a fun situation out of it, is really the goal.
And bring joy and a little bit
bring joy
and amazement to people at a time.
Thanks,
at
yeah.
various times where people can use that kind of a brain candy, Arthur.
Yeah, and in this age now too, where there's a lot of AI going on, people they're hungry for live interaction, and they want something real that's not on a screen, and they want something that it truly communicates with them in the moment.
Well, and that's that people still want that. And Art, I want to go back then. You and I were visiting earlier too, talking about how our family celebrated Christmas. Talk a little bit about what your memories are back in the day.
Yeah,
go for it.
I remember one of the coolest Christmas we had was when I believe we were living in Scio. We were on the rented farm, and I remember just getting some of the coolest gifts. And I thought the wrapping paper meant nothing to me, but I believe our gifts were all wrapped in catalog pages. I think things were pretty rough at that time. We didn't know it as kids. And I remember getting a Tonka truck. And I remember one of you guys got like this movie camera thing. There was a roller coaster game. This is like when I was three or 4 years old at this time. Just the coolest presents. And I don't know, that time there was just, it seemed to me one of the most amazing Christmases that I remember. Then, of course, remembering the Christmases in the Mount Angel Farm, you know, we celebrated it mostly on Christmas Eve was the time, because it gave us the time to, you know, we had all our chores done. Mom would have soup and broches, jello, and we'd have all sorts of wonderful treats, all sorts of wonderful foods. And then we would open up gifts, and just the taking the time, watching everybody open up a different gift that they loved. And then we got to play with our toys after that. It's a blast, you know?
It really was. And, what I noticed, Christmas, but also, you talk about Scio, Oregon, and where we were on that rental, because we moved up from Southern California and settled there in October of 1967. I'm weird about dates, Art. I just have those in my head. It's always been that way for me. But I remember, you know, in this era where you started seeing both parents would be working outside of the house for whatever reason, and I would go to people's houses, and it would be okay, but I would say, wow, there's no parent here. And they might have the latest color TV or hi-fi stereo, you know, back in those days and what have you.
But 8-track.
Yeah, 8-track coming in. We're talking the 60s and 45s. But I noticed there was things there. But I know that when I go back to our house, Yeah, I mean, we had our folks were there on the farm. Mom would be out helping dad at times. That would be part of the deal. Yeah. But I felt like we had a coziness. We had, I felt more security, and I felt, even if we didn't have all the stuff because of a dual income family, and let's face it, our beginnings there in Sial were pretty tough. I didn't notice until I started looking at other people's stuff. But we always had, we had that type of environment of security and love. And we knew where mom and dad were. Well, and sometimes I'd try and hide from dad because that meant I'd have a job I'd have to do. But all that said, you know, there was some really amazing things growing up and seeing that as society kind of started to show differences, you know? What do you think?
I mean, you know, it's hard for me to try to compare it to, you know, what other people had in that sense. I just always remember we could... During Christmas time, there was always the school shows would come out first with the concerts. You know, you'd have that, and we'd sing our songs, and all grade levels would. And especially when we, you know, that first year we were in Mount Angel, maybe the second year, you know, you were in there, Louie was there, I was there, and so we'd see everybody's class do their thing.
Yeah.
And everybody knew each other, you know? I think there was do we look out more for each other? Do we just know more about each other? Maybe there was more. We cared. We kind of knew what people were going through. There's communications were direct. We're face-to-face.
Yeah.
And today, it's not that. So there's a disconnect, I think.
Let's hold that thought for a moment, Art. We'll bring that over to the next site. Jake, Real Matters with my brother, Art, Atlanta, Georgia. Hang on, final segment.
Back to the Blue Star Gas, Real Matters on 1430 KYKN. Once again, here's Jake.
Jake, Real Matters. Happy Christmas season, everybody. I know we're still, days away from that, but it flies this whole year. I honestly don't know where it went. I do, but I don't. It's a blur. I know it comes from getting older, dude. With me, Art Atsma, my brother, just confident, someone that I just esteem so highly. You know, last segment talking about how, we were personal. We knew everybody in our class.
Right.
We knew our neighbors. We had a lot of farmers all around us, a couple dairies at that time, crop farmers and everything. And there was that camaraderie, and I didn't say we all got along perfectly, but it seemed like we did get together and have fun, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, those are cool memories that you get to, you know, revisit and stuff like that. And then I don't know, how do you bring it into the modern age? Or, you know, things are different now in that sense, and it's still good. I think that, you know, the most important thing, there was always a sense, definitely, especially, you know, even at the public school, Monitor Elementary, there was still a sense of, you know, Christ is King. You know, it was everybody seemed to be affiliated with the church at that time, you know, and so you could sing songs about Christ in a manger, and that wasn't even it wasn't even thought of. It wasn't even, you know, nobody would bat an eye at Away in the Manger or Joy to the World or Angels We Have Heard on High. And now it's, you know, we live in an age where people talk about, you know, Happy Holidays, which is great. There's still holy days. We're getting something there, but it's Christ's Mass. You know, it's the advent of Christ is what we celebrate. And I think that's the one thing I miss probably the most in that sense, is just where it was just such an accepted, this is the way it is. This is about Christ's birth, and we have fun with that because he gave us the ultimate gift, being his life.
How do spinning off that, and do I hear Tyson in the background there?
I can't. I'm sorry if you're hearing that, man.
I'm glad to hear that, dog. We were worried about him.
There's an intruder alert going on, Jake.
Yeah, well, your cul-de-sac is a high crime area there where you're at. I know.
Oh, I know, right?
No, you know, in the minutes we have left, in the minutes we have left of the program, how do you being in a, now granted you're in the South, a little different than here in Oregon, no doubt about it, but how do you, How do you manage being true to yourself and at the same time be able to say, hey, you know, can you let people know without being bombastic about where you're at with your faith as you do programs, even right now at Christmas time?
Right. Yeah.
How does that work for
you? I just got back. It's really funny. I just had three totally different performances, right? I had a close-up performances where I did, you know, 3 hours of coin card, you know, magic, you know, in small groups of, you know, 3 to 4 people at a time. I did that on Friday. I had a piano gig playing Christmas carols at a party, a house party, on Saturday. And then on Monday, I had a stand-up routine for a Christmas show for folks who build the Forest River RVs, one of the divisions up in Indiana. Yeah, I mean, three completely different segments. With the first group, you know, you just do the totally, you know, it's not a Christian crowd. I mean, it's just a secular, you know, thing. I'm doing work. I'm doing a corporate thing. Just do the absolute best job, for one, give them something that is my absolute best. I have to give it, you know, more than 100%. And then just they see it. I don't know. We don't have to preach people. If you live it and Jesus is emanating from your heart, because that's what makes me tick. Just joy from Christ. And it's like, here, I get to do this for a living. My goodness, there's your testimony. And then somebody will ask you, what are you about? And then you say things like, you know, hey, I'm married for 40 years and we have 6 kids. They kind of go, oh, you have a lifestyle that's different than most people, you know. They figure it out in so many ways, especially in a Western society. And I'm always happy to share Jesus with anybody. And we'll do so at the drop of a hat when it's appropriate, you know, or asked about. You know, I think that just always have a ready answer for your joy. Always have a ready answer for your faith is a big thing. You don't have to just, you know, hit people over the head with stuff. And for fun, I like to use allegory in my shows. You know, I like everything is sort of is like a, what do you call those things? A parable almost.
Oh, that's what, I think that's what Jesus did a lot, right?
Right? I know, right? And so, I use money in my shows and, you know, talk about, you know, money is not the root of all evil. It's the love of money is the start of evil, you know? And just, you know, you can make quips. You can joke about things that they already know. And then, I don't know. Just because being a Christian, being a follower of Jesus, doesn't mean we have to be stodgy. You know, we should be the most joyful people on this planet, knowing what he's done for us. And so let's let that be your testimony, Jake. I mean, that's the way I do it. Other people have other ways of doing it.
Well, you run into all kinds of people in your life, dude. I mean, especially we've got a couple of minutes left, Art.
Oh, good.
And before we finish this program.
Sure.
When did it just like dawn on you that you were going to be an entertainer? We got a couple, 3 minutes for you to share that. When did it just like, were you in high school? Where were you at?
My junior year, maybe it's my junior year of high school. And I remember David Holmes, the band director at that time, he kind of let us go. He goes, hey, if you want to take any instruments home to play over the summer, anything that's not even in your field, go ahead and do it. And I remember grabbing a violin and thinking it was the coolest thing, and then taking it and then playing violin while walking down the feed alley.
Yeah, I remember.
getting the cow's attention and going, hey, this will work. that was the start of it. It was like, I like doing this. I like doing things and bringing, it's not so much the look at me, what I can do thing. It's the, I think you might like this. I think this, you know, like in a magic trick, I think you might enjoy this illusion, you know, this or in a song, you know, write music. I think, you know, you might like what this sounds like. It's something I like to create to share. Does that
right.
make sense?
Yeah. How do you come up with that? You know, I mean, what's your source? Where do you get your visions? You know?
Yeah. Gosh, Jake, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of things. Man, I don't draw like on current events. I'm not that kind of a comedian or performer in the sense that I like to create situational, you know, comedy magic out of, you know, the situation that's going to arise when I get a volunteer on stage, for instance, you know, and you ask them for their watch. Could I borrow your watch? I need to time this. You know, I mean, you create some sort of a, and then in the process of, you know, why I need to borrow your watch, sir, is because actually it's going to get destroyed.
So you're not pulling somebody's Rolex off the wrist?
Again.
are you getting Timex watches or are you getting some real heavy gear?
Oh, Jake, I remember I did a thing. Oh my gosh. I did a show up in Eugene. This is years ago. And these guys were forestry industry people. And I borrowed the watch of like the oldest guy I could find in the room. And I guess he was the head of his company for whatever, you know, the patriarch, right?
Yeah.
And I borrowed his watch. And when the hammer came down and hit it, the room went quiet. I mean, there was just complete silence. It was a big cry. And he goes, "You don't know who I am, do you, young man?" I just froze as I looked at him. But my goodness, Jake, the room just erupted, you know, in laughter. The people were just laughing.
When I made his watch come back again, he was the first
one to stand up and start clapping.
Isn't that something, though? Isn't that something, dude? It really is. I'm talking with my brother Art out of Atlanta, Georgia. I've been entertaining people for well over 40 years, myself included, and just wanting to have a wonderful time. Art, you know, so good talking. I think we need to carry this on over to the next program, my man. Arthur Atzma out in Atlanta, Georgia. We're having Christmas time Advent talk about growing up, and we're gonna hit some other things, Art. And just so good to hear from you. This is Jake, and you are listening to Rural Matters right here on 1430 AM KYKN here in Salem, the center capital of Oregon, and the center of Salem. Back.
This has been the Blue Star Gas Rural Matters every Friday at noon on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.